Hello and welcome to the Local Economic Development Podcast.
Hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Stahlmann.
For other programs in this series, please take a look at www.ledcast.net.
In today's show, we will talk about one of my favorite concepts, and that is systemic competitiveness. Jörg, what do we mean when we talk about systemic competitiveness, and where does this come from?
Well, it's actually a good question. It's a concept that is being used quite a bit, but is also quite often misunderstood. The background is that there was a point in time in the 1990s when I was still working in research, when we thought that we needed a more appropriate framework to understand why some countries are developing so much better than other countries, and why some clusters and some localities are developing so much better than other countries. And that was what we tried to capture with this concept of systemic competitiveness.
So before we start talking about systemic competitiveness, there's two other topics that we just briefly have to touch on. And the first one would be competition and competitiveness, and then also globalization. So why don't we start off by just briefly looking at competition?
Obviously, for a concept around competitiveness to make any sense, you need to have competition. And having competition in all sorts of markets is, well, it's not obvious. There's many countries where you don't have competition in many markets. I mean, look at your country where you're suffering from the disadvantages of lack of competition in, for instance, the telecommunications market. So there was a time when this kind of phenomenon, where you had many markets that were organized as monopolies, often as state-owned monopolies, was very common, and where many other markets only had two or three competitors who weren't really competing very hard, but rather divided the market up amongst themselves. From a historic perspective, one of the reasons for this issue is that there used to be a concept that was called import substitution. So when people started to think about how to develop countries, or how countries could develop themselves 60 years ago, one of the things they obviously discovered was that there were a couple of countries that were highly industrialized and very rich, and other countries that were not quite industrialized and not very rich. And that the conditions for industrialization in those other countries, not so rich countries, weren't very favorable. So for a new company to start its operation in such a country, especially in a more complex and a more advanced industry, it obviously had to battle with the contenders, with the established company from Europe and the United States, who were more than happy to try to keep those new competitors out of their markets. And that is why, in those days, one of the strategic approaches to development was to say, we need import substitution. We need to come up with an active strategy that protects our market against competitors that come from outside the country, because that's the only way we can create domestic companies and domestic industries.
So before we continue with the discussion, let's just quickly look at how firms compete.
Well, I think the main point is to understand that firms really don't like to compete.
Okay.
When you ask a business person how they like competition, I mean, they wouldn't obviously blatantly say, well, I hate it. But the truth is, they hate it. I mean, it's creating all sorts of troubles for them. They have to upgrade all the time. They have to improve all the time. They have to come up with new products all the time. They have to change their processes and their products all the time. Well, it's really disruptive, and companies very much would prefer not to compete and to have a nice protected market where they have acute monopoly, where they can make a lot of money with very mediocre products. And that is the kind of situation that we actually had in many countries for a very long time.
So let's just quickly look. There's one typology of that describes company competitiveness based on price. So it's either low cost or high cost or high value. There's quality. So companies can decide to compete in different quality segments in the market. There's flexibility in manufacturing or switching from one product to the next. And there's also responsiveness, which means to use the feedback from the market or new opportunities to change its structures.
Or how quick can you actually respond to customer needs and customer demands.
Yes, and there's that new concept of mass customization.
And stuff like that, yeah. Yes. So, in the old days, these things were kind of mutually exclusive. And one of the things that happened over the past 20 years that some companies managed to optimize along all four criteria at the same time.
Okay, but these things obviously doesn't apply to a location, to a place.
But then again, why not? If you think about it, when you are in a place where you're, let's say, specializing in some kind of vegetable, and you're competing, your local producers are competing with producers elsewhere in some other location, then these criteria actually do apply to your locality. If, for instance, your government institutions don't respond quickly when producers come up and say, look, we have a pest issue here and we need to do something quickly about it because it's not something that we can sort out on our own, and government can't really respond to that, then you're in trouble. Or if you have quality issues that have to do with dismal infrastructure because all the merchandise is damaged because of deep potholes all the time, then again, that is something that cannot be fixed by the companies alone, but that where government also needs to come in, and where then the locality as a whole needs to engage.
Okay, so we're progressing nicely, because what we've basically just said is that places do actually compete, and that competition is largely also influenced by how much the firms in the place can compete.
Mm.
An example would be where you have one city region or one area that could be competing with another country or another region, or even a town in the same country where you're competing for skilled. And maybe it's important to say that not only firms don't enjoy competition, many public officials also don't like competition so much. So in South Africa, I once heard a public official who said, well, why should our places be competing with each other? Maybe we don't want our towns and our municipalities to be competing.
Mm. Which kind of takes us back to what we just talked about. So there was a time when many countries were, to a significant extent, closed against the world market. And it was really difficult for foreign companies to move into those countries and to compete in those countries, especially when they didn't have a local production site. Whereas nowadays, with all the liberalization, of trade and of capital flows that has been going on over the past 20 years, with all the increased movement of companies all around the world, obviously there is less and less kind of protected niches where you are sitting in a place where not really any competitor is going to show up anytime soon. And I think it's absolutely crucial for people to understand that. So either you understand this phenomenon that with globalization, with liberalization, your locality is competing against, and the producers in your locality are competing against producers in many other places on this globe.
Mm.
Or if you don't understand that, then you're probably going to be marginalized and you're going to be hurt, because some people understand this better and prepare better for this new situation.
And maybe just a closing remark on competition is that it's not just a competition for profits or market share. Places are also competing for families, for senior management skills, for specialized skills, for institutions,
yes,
for specialized service providers. So that this, when places compete, they compete on a much wider front than just these four examples that we've used.
Yeah, exactly.
So Jörg, let's start looking at systemic competitiveness. There's four layers in systemic competitiveness.
Well, what we try to point out is that kind of the conventional, the mainstream view, which is based on macroeconomics theory and microeconomics theory, is, albeit very important, only part of the story. So when you look at, for instance, World Bank documents, you find they only look at macro level and micro level. They look at the generic framework conditions, they look at fiscal policy and trade policy and monetary policy and those things. They also look at things like property rights, which you would address as a macroeconomic issue. And then they look at microeconomic issues. So how are markets operating? To what extent are markets distorted? What is keeping markets from working properly? And their assumption is that if you get your macroeconomic framework right and if you get your markets right, then your country is just going to take off and everybody's going to be much more prosperous. Now, when you look at things from a historic perspective, you find that this kind of theory, this kind of perspective, does not hold true for any country that has developed successfully over the past 200 years. All these countries have had active policies, have formulated, have pursued active policies to very specifically and in a very focused and targeted way develop new economic sectors, develop new industries or new agricultural areas or new service sectors. So there is a long tradition and a long history of selective intervention. And we introduce that, we address that as the meso level.
Okay, so the first layer was macro, mm-hmm. and the second layer then, the layer just below that, would be meso. And that's the area of targeted interventions, very selected strategies and responses to needs in the market.
Yes. And one way to address that, or one way to describe it, would be to say, well, there's market failure. I mean, we had an episode on market failure where we explained that concept. And in order to address market failure, you need some kind of intervention. Maybe you are capable of actually fixing the market, fixing in terms of making it work. Maybe it's a market that will never work because it's highly specialized stuff or public goods that really only government can provide. So you will have some kind of temporary interventions at the meso level, and you will have some other more permanent interventions at the meso level. But in any case, you want to have all sorts of activities going on at the meso level, which is in between microeconomics, that is markets and firms, and macroeconomics, which is the generic framework conditions. And maybe just to highlight one more point, the critical distinction between macro and meso is about selectiveness. Macro is about generic conditions, generic policies. Meso is about selective or targeted policies. Many people understand that meso is about spatial issues. So macro is the national level and meso is the regional level and micro is the local level. But that is not the way we define and we use those terms.
Okay. So we've said macro, we've spoken about micro. You've just said micro is about firms, it's about markets. It's also about networks, mm-hmm. and many other activities.
Alliances, all sorts of collaborations, yeah.
Yes, and a lot of people, I think, are familiar with the micro. But there's four layers in the systemic competitiveness framework. Which one is then outstanding?
Well, the one layer that is kind of on top of everything else or overarching all the other things is what we call the meta level, or the level that is beyond the other levels. When you look at countries from the conventional perspective, say the World Bank perspective, it's really difficult to understand why some countries are so much more effective at creating a favorable economic environment than other countries. And obviously that is one of the points where economics as an academic discipline sooner or later reaches its limits. It can describe things such as the fundamental order. So do you fundamentally have a system that is market friendly, or do you try to organize anything through everything to government, which is, as we have experienced, not working so well. But then there's other features where you need to draw on all sorts of other disciplines to understand those. And basically at the meta level we are looking at kind of three areas or three topics. The one is societal factors, the other one is political factors, and the third one is economic factors. So how is society at large, but also at the local level, working? How is the political system working? To what extent is the political system capable of actually addressing issues and formulating and implementing effective policies? And how does the economic system work? And is it an economic system in your country or in your area that is actually development friendly?
And the other day you described this so nicely when you said these are the slow variables. It's typically things that take a long time to change.
Yes, yeah, right.
So Jörg, how would these different layers interact with each other and influence each other?
Well, I think that is the critical point and the usefulness of the concept. Maybe just let me just briefly step back and explain why I think that this concept is useful. What you often find is that there is kind of an ongoing discussion where people say, well, the critical point about development is industry policy, and then it's innovation policy, and then it's skills development, and then it's enabling environment. And that is kind of a limited view or a monocausal perspective at development issues. What we try to understand is how a couple of different factors influence each other. Why is it, again, as I said before, why is it that some places and some countries develop better than other countries? So we need to look at a whole set of factors at these different levels. The first thing we typically do is to kind of describe a locality looking at the factors at the four levels. So for instance, one of the things that I consistently find puzzling when I come to your country, to South Africa, is that in order to capture what is going on at the meso level, you need approximately one A6 card. And you put the three or four organizations that you have that are active at the meso level on the A6 card, and that is the end of your fact-finding, because that's all the organizations that you have, more or less. Whereas in other countries, and especially in countries that are growing quicker, you find that there's a much thicker and much wider landscape of organizations and a much more diverse set of policies that are being implemented very effectively. So describing the four levels is a very important first step.
Okay, so to get back to the previous point, how would these different levels interact with each other?
Mm-hmm. Well, what you then typically try to understand is what kind of linkages do you have between those different levels? So for instance, when you do an analysis of a local economy, you typically stumble across a couple of things that are wrong at the micro level. So you find that companies aren't that competitive, collective action isn't going very well, there's all sorts of market failure. And then you try to understand why is that. And that then takes you to factors at all the other levels. So maybe there's something wrong at the macro level. Mm. Maybe it's complicated to enforce property rights. Maybe it's something about the meso level. Maybe it's complicated to get your product certified because there isn't an effective organization that is providing that kind of service, and it is also not viable as a commercial service. And maybe it's something at the meta level. And ultimately, when you then identify those different factors and pursue these different hypotheses, you start to form a picture of how they interact, mm. what kind of feedback mechanisms you have.
And how they reinforce each other.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I think what we've seen when we use this framework is that a problem at the local level in a municipality is hardly ever just caused by one or two factors. Mm-hmm. It's reinforced. So
yes.
Your example, firms aren't competitive. It could be everything that you explained just now, but it could also be that in that specific community, competition isn't seen as important, or the role of entrepreneur, the status of entrepreneur in that community is not very high.
Yeah.
So there could be a whole variety of things that are reinforcing each other, and this factor, the fact that these firms aren't competitive, in itself is busy reinforcing other kinds of behavior.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it becomes. I always get the feeling that you can see how things are connected when you use this framework.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just to mention another factor, another typical meta-level factor, collective memory.
Mm.
So you come in with your development initiative, and people think that what you try to do is something that somebody else tried 2 years ago, and yet somebody else 5 years ago, and yet somebody else 10 years ago, and they all failed. So there is an expectation that in all likelihood you're also going to fail, because apparently you try to do the same thing, which then means that you won't get very strong buy-in.
Mm.
So the support that you get from different actors is going to be relatively weak, which will compromise your initiative, which will then probably make your initiative fail. And then everybody will say, ha, told you so. From the outset, I told you this is not going to work because it has never worked before.
So maybe it's very important to at this moment say that in a locality where we most often work, all four levels are present at
yes.
the local
yes.
level and at the regional and at the national level and even international.
Mm-hmm.
And what we mean with that is that if we take macro policy as an example, or the macro level, that's something that is typically determined at a national level, but certain provinces or states or regions have a certain subset of policies, but a local municipality typically operates with a whole variety of bylaws and rules and spatial planning concepts.
Mm.
So So these four levels of the framework are also present at every level, and they typically compound. The effects of the table is compounded to a local level.
And then as a consequence, so when you look at this, when you try to analyze your local economy from this angle, what you then come up with is a systemic perspective. So you're looking at the local economy as a system. And maybe let me emphasize that we try to look at it as a living system. So it's not a mechanical system. It's not like a machine where you then find the one weak spot, the one lever, the one wheel that isn't rotating properly. And you try to fix that, and then everything, the whole machine will work well. So the local economy is not like a car, where when one thing is broken, you just need to fix it, and then the car will work again. A local economy, just like any economy, is a living system. And as such, it is much more difficult to fix than a mechanical system. So what you try to understand with your analysis is, what are the critical factors that influence each other at the different levels? What are the key factors that you that create either virtuous circles or vicious circles, the circles that create a positive feedback or the circles that create a negative feedback? And where are the entry points? Where do you start with interventions? What are possible points of lever where you can then try to come up with some kind of intervention that would influence the whole system and change the way the whole system works?
Where I typically use systemic competitiveness is to also organize my thoughts and my insights and findings when I'm involved with something like a value chain or a cluster. Because by placing the findings and the insights into these different layers, I can start thinking of how do they reinforce each other what could be causing those symptoms from other angles.
Yes, I mean, let us just to illustrate that, come back to your case or the case of your country. What we find there is, as I said earlier, a very weak meso level. But why is that? I mean, you can describe that, but then the question is, well, why is that the case? And personally, my hypothesis is that it has a lot to do with factors at the meta level. For instance, the fact that South Africa is one of the countries where not everybody is happy with the evolution towards a market economy and a private sector-driven economy. So you have kind of this fundamental disagreement about the economic order and the way in which the economy is organized. What is the role of the state? Should it have a strong role or a weak role? What is the role of the private sector? To what extent can you leave markets to their own, and to what extent has government tried to arrange markets or organize markets? And when you have this kind of disagreement, this kind of fundamental disagreement on what the overall direction should be, it's only obvious that you're not going to have a very sophisticated discussion on how exactly to strengthen the meso level, because many people or many political actors would argue that this objective of stimulating competitiveness by creating a strong meso level is not a priority, because the priority is to, well, for instance, to create cooperatives.
And there's other issues, like I don't think that the competitiveness of the South African economy internationally is a topic that's discussed very often. I sometimes don't get the feeling that it is so important.
Yes, right.
A lot of people would immediately argue and say, but there are many institutions in South Africa, many different bodies and organizations doing things. So they would say, but how can you say that there are so few?
Well, I mean, compared to other countries that also aren't developing that well currently, like Sri Lanka, which is another country where I worked a lot, they have so many more organizations, especially government organizations, that appear to be active at the meso level. But then again, they are suffering from the very same problem, kind of a lack of perspective or a lack of a shared goal in terms of where the country should develop, where the economy should develop. And again, it has to do with meta-level factors. Maybe let me also mention just another case. I recall one PACA exercise in the very early days of PACA 10 years ago, where we looked at one locality in Brazil, and we were really surprised by the amount of effective collective action and responsiveness of the local society to all sorts of challenges. And we couldn't really sort out what was happening there, because the play, we had done similar exercises around and the other places just didn't work that well. And then we really dug into it, and we ultimately looked at history. We started to look at the creation of that place, which has existed for 150 years. And we then ultimately found that it had a very different genesis, a very different early history than the other localities. And that had kind of created a completely different genetic code of that locality and of the local society compared to the other society. So again, the meta level as a crucial factor.
Okay, now, but some people might say that now we're getting into culture, mm-hmm. and we are blaming many mistakes or mm-hmm. failures of countries to respond on culture.
Yeah. I think the crucial point is to understand that that culture is usually a very rational response to a given situation. When you look at an, at another challenge that typically comes up in many African countries, where individual success of a given entrepreneur leads to the fact that all sorts of relatives that are knocking at the door and want to share in your recently acquired richness. Well, it is a system that, that historically obviously made sense. So if you were in a if you are in that kind of environment where ecosystems are extremely, extremely unstable, where life is in generally, is generally speaking so much more risky than it is in other parts of the world, having these kinds of solidarity systems is perfectly rational and a really good response to the kind of environment that you are operating in. Unfortunately, though, it is at the same time an obstacle to development models that are based on individual achievement and on individual entrepreneurship. And looking at it from that angle, that tells you that they're just running some kind of entrepreneurship training is probably not going to change the bigger system, because the bigger system militates against individual achievement. So you then have to start a conversation, okay, so is there any way we can change the bigger system? And if that is the case, how would it work?
Yes. I think what is important is to also then realize that with the four levels that introduce each other, a lot of people would say a lot of the problems start in the meta level, mm-hmm. where culture to a certain mm-hmm. degree resides. Mm-hmm. But that very same level would be reinforced also by the other levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just that the meta level takes longer.
Yeah.
Some of the issues there...
Changes slower.
So I would be very careful, very concerned if people take our conversation to mean the problems start in culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think one must be very careful about
that. That's right. And you also cannot influence it directly.
No.
I mean, the Chinese tried that in the 1960s with those really brutal re-education camps. And that is definitely not something that we would want to see anywhere else repeated.
Mm.
You typically would influence the meta level by interventions at the other levels.
Mm.
And again, it's about the systemic perspective. You want to come in with an idea of how factors at different levels are influencing each other, and where you start with your intervention and what kind of effects you would expect from that intervention.
Right, Jörg. So this was a really great conversation about a fantastic tool. And I hope that our listeners will go out and start thinking in these terms and try to allocate some of the symptoms that they see
mm-hmm.
To these different layers.
Mm-hmm. Maybe what we should highlight is that, to start with this, the first step, as I said, is to look at your locality from the perspective of the four layers and to try to understand what is happening at each of the four levels. And in order to make it a little bit easier, what we've done is to create what we call the benchmarking table,
mm-hmm.
where we've come up with a couple of critical variables or factors that we typically see in successful localities that our listeners could then use as kind of a benchmark to see how their place is faring.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put a link onto the website where people will be able to download that table, as well as a recent document on systemic competitiveness that also reflects our most recent thinking. And other documents are actually available at the publications part of the MesoPartner website.
So great. So if our listeners want to engage with us on this topic, then we would welcome emails or comments,
mm-hmm.
questions, and also suggestions.
Exactly. And that would be at info@ledcast.net.